Today's topic, I think the sign read, The Teaching Tree. Sounds like a little children's book, The Teaching Tree. My wife actually told me there is a book called a children's book called The Teaching Tree. We're not going to talk about the children's book, The Teaching Tree, today. The reason why I was inspired to talk about this topic today was the Jewish calendaric date today is the seventh day of Shvat. What's unique about the seventh day of Shvat? Not so much. I mean, every day is special, obviously. But the seventh day of Shvat is almost exactly in between the first day of Shvat and the 15th day of Shvat. What's unique about the first day of Shvat and the 15th day of Shvat? So the first Mishnah in the tractate Rosh Hashanah teaches us that there are four Jewish New Years that exist. Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim. There are four Rosh Hashanahs that exist. We know the most famous one that we know about is the one on Rosh Hashanah. We dip the apple in the honey. That's the most famous Rosh Hashanah we're used to. But the Mishnah describes that there are other Rosh Hashanahs as well. And the last one delineated in the Mishnah is Be'echad B'Shvat Rosh Hashanah Le'ilan. On the first day of Shvat, the first day of the Hebrew month of Shvat, the Jewish month of Shvat, is the new year for trees. The new year for trees? That's according to the opinion of Beis Shammai. The school of Shammai taught the first day of Shvat is the new year for trees. And the Mishnah continues and ends off Beis Hillel Omrim B'chamisha Asarba. Beis Hillel teach that it's not the first day of Shvat, but rather it's the 15th day of Shvat, which will be next Monday night and Tuesday. I hope to please God be in Israel next Monday, so I can't talk about it next Monday. And I figure we're almost exactly in the middle, in between the first day of Shvat, which is the new year according to the school of Shammai, and the 15th, which is the new year according to Hillel. So I figured it would be appropriate to discuss a little bit of the arboreal world and some lessons which we can take out and glean from trees. Just parenthetically, before we get into the lessons, there is a halachic ramification. There are laws which are mandated from the date of Tu B'Shvat. They apply mostly to agriculture, but the rule is that there is something called Truma and Maaser, which are various different tithes that were given when there was a temple, when there was Beis HaMikdash, to the Kohen tribe, to the Levites. And the rule is that we assume, like the second opinion in the Mishnah, which is that the new year is the 15th of Shvat. The rule is that you're only allowed to give tithes to the Kohen and to the Levi, if it's from this year's produce. So what's the cutoff? What's the cutoff of this year's produce? So the rabbis teach us the cutoff is Tu B'Shvat, which is, please God, next Monday again, is the cutoff point, at which point, if the fruit are from the coming year, you can only give for the coming year. If the fruit are from the previous year, then you can give from the previous year. So it's not just a nice day, we'll sing songs, Tu B'Shvat Igiyah, and have Buxer, and have dates, but there's more. There is actually some Jewish law which is mandated, which is apparent from this day. Okay, what do man have to do with trees? Is there a connection between man and trees? There's actually a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah teaches in the fifth book. It says as follows: when there's an army going into a city, they're going to fight the city. So it says, don't take down your axes and start chopping down all the trees. Don't cut all the trees down. Why? The pasuk says, "Ki ha'adam eats hasadeh," because man is akin to the tree of the field. And what does that mean? What does it mean? Man is like a tree of a field. In what sense is a man like a tree? So, if we think about it, many of the commentaries explain a beautiful insight that if we look at a tree, we really see a lot of comparisons to man. What are those comparisons? Well, let's start with the tree. Let's look at the tree. So what comprises the tree? So we know that there's a body of a tree called the bark of the tree. And there are the roots of a tree. And there are the branches of a tree. I'm sure if someone knows more about the arboreal world, so there's probably many, many more parts of the tree that I'm not discussing. But the most basic level, there are roots, there's the body of the tree, and there are the branches. Well, let's take a look at a human being also. Do a little... My hands, my legs, similar to branches. Okay. My body, is like the body of a tree. We're the roots of man. So the rabbis teach us, some of the commentaries explain a beautiful idea. That man's roots, man in essence, is somewhat of an upside down tree. How so? Because the roots of a tree are planted into the ground. And where are man's roots? Man's roots are meant to be planted upward, up toward the heaven. How so? There's a beautiful teaching, which I'll read inside and I'll translate every word, don't worry. I'll read every word and translate. A beautiful teaching from the Malbim, one of the great commentaries, in the first psalm. The first psalm, Tehillim, the first Perek Aleph, reads as follows. Praiseworthy is the person that doesn't go in the path of the wicked and doesn't follow the those that are not upright. And the pasuk continues, what's he like? V'haya, he will be ke'etz shasul al pagimayim. He will be like a tree planted on water. What does that mean? How is he like a tree planted on water? So says the Malbim, a beautiful, beautiful idea. He says, ki ha-moach ba-adam, man's brain, hu tachas ha-shoresh be'etz ha-sadeh, is in place of the roots in a tree. Mimenu yotos kol ha-hergeshos el ha-anafim, she'em ha-evarim kulamo ve'elav yishuvun. Just like you have in a tree, so the roots provide all the nutrients that the tree needs to the branches, so too a person's brain, a person's moach, his head, provides all that's needed for the body to get what it needs in order to go. The mind is the sends everything out to the rest of the body, just as the roots send everything to the tree. Says the Malbim, Mize yaskil ha'adam. From this, a person should understand and contemplate. He's not exactly like a tree. How is he different? Asher chiyuso v'ikaro ba'adama. Because its main nourishment is from the ground. Kisharsho v'ikaro ba'alyonim. Because a man's root, a man's essence, is ba'alyonim. Is in much higher spheres. Misham yikabel shif'o v'chiyuso. From there, that's where he gets his sustenance. That's where he gets his life. And he says, if a person gets all of his nourishment from the ground, from earth, from earthly pleasures, without getting his nourishment from the sky, he says, it's like walking on his head. Some people walk on their heads at weddings, it's like a nice shtick, you know, people do it at weddings because they want to get the bride and groom excited. But people are sometimes walking all the time on their heads. So a person that's walking straight has his head in Shemayim, has his head planted upward, because he gets his nourishment not only from the physical world, but primarily from the spiritual, from Shemayim, which is an idea which we can definitely take out from a tree. And I think there are numerous lessons we could pull out of this idea. I'm just going to just suggest a couple. The name man, the term for man in Hebrew is Adam. Adam comes from the word Adama. Because as we know, we came from the ground. So on the one hand, we come from the ground. On the other hand, we know that God put into every human being, Tzelem Elokim, we're partly God. So how do we reconcile the fact that we're from the ground, but we're godly? So there's a beautiful insight given by the Shalah HaKadosh, who says, very simple. The word Adama means ground. You take the little vowels, my daughter now, who's 5.5 years old, is learning vowels, learning how to read with vowels now. So take the vowels, and instead of it saying Adama, change the vowels a little bit and read something else entirely different. Adame. Adame le'elyon. Which means I want to try as much as possible to make myself like God. I'm godly. Yeah, I come from the ground. Yeah, my makeup is physical. As much as I can, I want to try to be Adame le'elyon. I want to try as much as I can to make myself close to Hashem. How so? So let's give a practical example. Lunch and learn. We're eating anyway today, right? I mean, unless someone's not eating today because it's a national holiday in honor of Martin Luther King, we're not going to eat today. Everyone's eating today anyway, right? We're eating today. But we're eating, and at the same time, lunch and learn. You can elevate to eating. The simple, mundane act of eating can be ennobled by eating and learning at the same time. You'll excuse this example. People go to the bathroom every single day, many times. Judaism tells you when you go to the bathroom, that could be a very holy religious experience. Afterwards, if you realize, wow, I went to the I went to the bathroom. I don't even want to say. I have my Aunt Shirley is here. I feel right at home. My Aunt Shirley and I, since I was in diapers, Aunt Shirley knows me. My grandparents, they should live and be well. They're both, Bli and Har, 94 years old. Unfortunately, both a little bit under the weather now. But you could tell, unfortunately, when a person's system goes, that's it. What we take for granted, going to the bathroom. So the rabbis teach us, you know what? After you go to the bathroom, there's a blessing. Asher Yatzar, elevate that. You're going to the bathroom, elevate the mundane. It's a mundane thing. But you could thank God every time you go to the bathroom for the ability, because we are Adam El Elyon. We are looking upwards. We are trying not just to live life in a physical, mundane reality, but we're trying to elevate life. We're trying to Adam El Elyon as much as possible, realize that our shoresh, our roots, are not merely in the ground, we're not only earthly, but rather we have roots that also exist upward. Just one more example. My wife recently overheard my father. It was vacation time. And he was going on the treadmill, because that was doctor's orders. Doctor's orders are that he has to go on the treadmill, keep in shape. Okay. So my wife happened to be upstairs in the house, and she heard my father saying to himself, I'm now ready to fulfill the obligation in which the Torah commands us of safeguarding your body. Who thinks like that? The gyms in the world are packed. Every morning people are running to the gym and doing exercise and videos and this and that. Who's thinking when they go to exercise, you know what? I'm preserving my body. That's Adam El Elyon. That's taking the physical and uplifting it and making the mundane acts that we do into spiritual, elevated acts. That's the first lesson I thought we could glean from trees. Namely, that of elevating, of realizing that our roots, as opposed to a tree which are in the ground, our roots are somewhat in the Shemayim, in the heavens. Everyone should feel free to please comment or question, or be happy to, if I have answers, I'll be happy to answer you. If not, I'll be happy to tell you that I don't know the answer also. Okay, another lesson I thought which would be very very unique, which can be learned from trees, is based on a comment of the Maharal. We might be familiar. If we're not familiar, I'll be happy to try to familiarize us. The Torah teaches us that after there was a flood, a big flood, in times of Noah, and the entire world was destroyed. And after the flood, so Cham, the son of Noah, did a crime, an act to his father, which wasn't exactly the nicest act. The Torah doesn't say exactly what it was, but it was not. It was a very, very despicable, heinous act. And the Torah says that Noach realized, Vayeda, he realized, God bless you, Noach realized, Es asher asalo b'noach katon. Noach realized what his son Cham had done to him. That's what Noach realized. Okay, so what happened? So Noah places a curse upon his son. Noah curses his son. Has he cursed his son? He says, "Arur Canaan, cursed will be your son." Cham had a son. We'll see in a second called Canaan. Arur Canaan, Ever Avadim Yelachav. He will ultimately be a servant to his brothers. Question is, how is it possible? The Torah describes Noah as being Ish Tzaddik, a righteous man, the most righteous man of his time. How could it be that his son would commit such a disgusting, heinous act? How could it be that Cham, the son of Noach, the greatest man of his time, the greatest man to live in his time, and yet his son, Cham, commits a despicable, despicable act? How could that be? Maral Miprag was one of the unique Jewish thinkers that we had in history of Judaism, points out the following incredible, timely, and I think timeless insight. The Torah later on in Parshas Kedoshim describes that there are certain illicit relations that a person is not allowed to have. Goes through all the various different lists. Okay, you don't have to go through them. But the Torah introduces that prohibition of illicit relations with the following introduction. It says, "Kima'asei Eretz Mitzrayim." The acts that were done in Mitzrayim, Asher Yeshav Temba, that you lived in, that you dwelled in, Lo Ta'asun, don't do. U'chumaaseh Eretz Canaan, Asher Ani Mevi Eschem, don't do either. And don't do the acts that you saw in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, and the acts of those who live in Canaan, where you're going to. Why does it say the acts of Mitzrayim and the acts of Kena'an. Says the Maharal, an incredible insight. Chum, who did this terrible act to his father, had four sons. One son's name was Mitzrayim, Egypt. The other one was Kena'an. So what? Says the Maharal, I'll read you the words, I'll translate it again. He says, Ki chisaron ha-shoresh, yisgalev yisra'eh ba'anaf yoser. If there's something wrong with the root of a tree, back to trees again. Something wrong with the roots. If the roots are blemished, oftentimes you'll see the blemish more in the branches than in the roots. Ki zeh inyan anaf, because that is what a branch is all about. We're going to go outside in a few minutes and we'll see branches. Zeh inyan anaf. Shebo yisgala koch ha-shoresh. Because the branch tells you what's going on inside the roots. Are the roots healthy? Are the roots blemished? Yeah, take a look at the branch. If the branch is healthy, we could pretty much bet that the roots are also healthy. Listen to this. Ulefichach, therefore, chet ha-shoresh yisgale ba'anafim yosir mimashenire b'shoresh atzmo. Oftentimes, the sin of the root will become apparent more readily in the branch than in the root itself. In other words, how could it be, we asked, how could it be that Cham, the son of Noach, the greatest person, how could he commit such a crime? Explains about, oh, you know what the answer is? The Torah tells you. Look at his children. Look at the branches. Oftentimes, and this is not a rule, this is not a definite rule, I'm not saying every time a child goes off the path or off goes astray, so it's the fault of the parent. God forbid, I'm not saying that. But oftentimes there's an expression. Expression is, oftentimes the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Ah, not enough trees today again, right? Tree. And so too explains the Maharal that the reason why we Cham could perform such an act is if you look at his children. His children describe this Eretz Mitzrayim, this Eretz Canaan, this is the ultimate in lack of purity, the ultimate in what was called in Hebrew znus, in illicit behavior, is attached, is couched upon the sons of Cham. And therefore, from Cham's children, we could see to his father. I think this is such an incredible lesson. I'm going to share with you two or three anecdotes, which I think really...
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can't you apply the same rule to go back to Noah?
What do you mean? My wife asked me the same question. Very good. The answer to the question, which I said to her, excellent question, the answer is that the Torah doesn't. In other words, you could have said it like that. Maybe it was in Noah's root also, but maybe on a much, much less, you know, on a much, much
maybe
smaller level.
Maybe it was the tzaddik of his generation.
Only his generation?
Small.
Possibly. Okay. It's a very fair question, very
it's
fair point.
It's relative, isn't it?
It is definitely relative.
Because the commentators say Tadora Tav means it could be that he was a good person just not for all time, but just compared to
correct
to the bad things that were going on in his generation.
Correct. That's a dispute amongst the commentaries. Correct. That's right. The first, yes.
Well, does the Torah mention maybe it was competition and maybe
competition of
Noah was a wonderful person and his son might have been envious?
That's also a very excellent point. That's a very excellent point. That's brought down in. That's a very excellent point. Especially if you. No, you're right, 100%. Especially if you delve into exactly what his sin was, which I tried not to be graphic, especially with Lunch and Learn. I don't want to be graphic. All those that are familiar with the Rashi, great. If not, you can take a look yourselves, or I'll tell you after if you want. But I decided to. But it's a very you hit the nail on the head. Very, very good point. Very good point. I want to share with you two anecdotes, which I think really illustrate this idea. One is one I experienced myself, and one I heard. But anyone, please God, going to Israel, I can't believe this, I'm going to Israel tomorrow, please God. Anyone that's ever been on a bus in Israel will appreciate the following story. If not, you can still appreciate it. It's a beautiful story. This bus was going down a very, very packed neighborhood in Israel called Mattersdorf. Mattersdorf is one big street. If you can imagine around 15,000 people living on one street, maybe more. I'm guessing 15,000, maybe there's more. One street. Apartment buildings stacked up to like skyscrapers, yeah, like a Belfer, not as big as Belfer, not as many floors as here, but okay. Tons and tons of kids, many, many children, and everyone's getting onto the bus. And there's a few buses that go through. People are waiting to get onto the bus. In Israel, there's what's called bus cards, kartisia. Kartisia is a bus card. The adults have their fare, and the children have their fare. Okay. So the bus pulls up to a station, to a stop, a bus stop. in the middle, in the heart of Suez Canaan, 75 people pack onto the bus, if you can imagine this. So the bus driver has to sit there with his clicker and click everyone's ticket. It could take a few minutes. A little 7-year-old kid gets on the bus. And the bus driver is trying to hurry traffic. Obviously, he wants to get on. So the kid extends his ticket, and he's punching. And he said to the kid, "I punched your ticket already. Go ahead." And the kid said, "No, you didn't." And he said, "I punched your ticket already. Go back to the back of the bus. We have to get moving." He said, "No, you didn't." And the kid went back to the bus. He had no choice. The bus driver looks in his rearview mirror. He drives ahead, looks in his rearview mirror, and sees on a step of the bus the kid sitting and crying. Crying. The bus driver stops the bus. All these people on it. Goes over to the little child and says, "What's wrong, little boy? Why are you crying?" He said in Hebrew to the bus driver, crying, "Ani lo yachol, ze gneva. I can't take this free fare. That's thievery. I'm stealing. I can't do it. Ze gneva." It's an amazing story. Some finished off the story that the bus driver who wasn't religious became religious. I don't know if it's true or not. That's not the point. The point is, where did that start? Where do we find the roots of those branches? How important was it in this kid's house? Truth. How much of a focus did this child have when he was being brought up? You can't lie. You can't steal. You have to be totally truthful. Oftentimes we look at a child and we can see, wow, look at the roots. We look at a branch and see, wow, look at the roots of this child this kid had in his house. I can't do it. I can't steal from a bus driver. The bus driver didn't care. No one cared. I'll give you an example that happened to me just a bit ago. Very similar story. I was on it was past Pesach, and I went with my family to a fun station place. Fun station where you just, you know, they take like $10 for like a ride that lasts, you know, 30 seconds, and they're very good at, I guess, making money off people. But it's packed and chamoid. All the people are coming. Wonderful. And there's one booth, amazed that there was no one there taking tickets. So I saw two Jewish boys. One turned to the other and said, "Let's go in. No one's here taking tickets. Let's go in. No one's going to know." The other one looked him straight in the eye and said, "What are you, crazy? We can't go in there." So they walked over to one of the attendants. I think it was such a beautiful message to the attendant who was, and said to the attendant, "You know, there's no one here. What should we do?" And the attendant was floored, blown away. Which kind of kid? What kid? Where does that come from? So the answer is, that's the roots. If the roots that are given to children and to those who we are able to influence are strong, so then you can see the results oftentimes on the branches. Again, there are exceptions. Sometimes you find children that in spite of their parents, are the way they are, but oftentimes you can tell about the roots of somebody when you look at the branches. That's the second lesson that I wanted to bring out from trees. I'll just discuss one more, and then hopefully try to wrap it up. Third lesson, which is really most appropriate for Tu B'Shvat, which again is coming up in around the week, is a beautiful insight which is given by Rabbi Hirsch, Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. The Breuer's community on the other side of town is basically named after him. I think. Am I right? Yeah. The school, it says, right, Sanson Riffler School. This is if there ever was an appropriate place to talk about Rabbi Hirsch's ideas, I think this is a very appropriate place, a very appropriate time. Rabbi Hirsch has a sefer, a book, which he wrote in German, which was translated into Hebrew and English, called Ma'agle Hashana, in which he describes various holidays and the year, and he has a beautiful insight into Tu B'Shvat, which I think is also, again, timeless, back to timeless and timely. He points out as follows. Take a look outside. Today's a perfect day. Does it feel like spring outside? I don't know. I just from walking from 185th Street, 186th Street to here, my hands were freezing up when I walked in the door. It doesn't feel like spring. It's not springy at all right now. It's pretty cold, frigid. In fact, there's a lot of winter left to come. So far we haven't had much of winter yet this year, thank God. But there's a lot of winter yet to come. So what does it mean exactly that there's a rebirth, a new year for the trees now. It's winter. It's dead of winter. It's heart of winter. Where's the rebirth? Where's the renewal? So he points out a very, very beautiful idea. He says, if you take a look at the trees, what are we celebrating today? We're celebrating the fact, and not today, in a week or so, that inside the tree, deep down, although they were robbed of their fruits and of their leaves and of their beauty and their splendor, but the sap deep down inside the tree is beginning to regenerate itself and beginning to start the process of growth again. We don't necessarily focus on the externals, the actual budding, the actual greenery. That's not always what's most important. He says, there are winters, and what we're celebrating now is the fact that the tree, deep down, within itself, is able to find the strength, so to speak, and the sap that it has inside itself to begin its regrowth process. And that's what Tu B'Shvat's all about. And he explains with this a beautiful lesson. I'll read you a paragraph inside from the English. Very, very nice lesson which he brings out. That's what Tu B'Shvat's about. I'll read what he says, and then I'll try to give some practical applications. He says, on the 15th of Shvat, on the birthday of spring, in the midst of winter, leave your homes, shaken by winter storms and tempests. Behold the trees on the day of their birthday, and recall the beauty and harmony of their appearance, decorated with fruits and crowns of leaves, branches and twigs. Listen to this. Winter robbed them of their fruit and colorful leaves. The storms and cold broke branch after branch, twig after twig, leaving the trees covered with shrouds of ice and snow. Yet, lashed by the storms and fury of the season, they celebrate today their silent inner rebirth in defiance of nature's onslaughts. They're very profound words. But I think the lesson, or a lesson, which we can definitely take out into our lives from this, is a very, very beautiful concept, which is renewal. It's called Hischadshus. Rebirth. There are storms in life. We have winters. Everyone has periods in life that are summers, that are springy, that are happy, that are lofty, that are great. And then there are times which are wintry, stormy, more difficult to get through. So how do we deal with those issues? How do we get out of those problems? So a lesson which emerges from Tu B'Shvat is that of renewal. And especially in light of what he said, we're celebrating the sap that's inside, deep inside a person. We have to realize that inside every one of us, there is the opportunity to renew ourselves, to grow, to dig in and to find the sap that's within us and say, okay, I can get out of the storm. The storm is trying to take me over, but there's ways to overcome. I can overcome. I can renew myself. I could have a rebirth. That's what Tu B'Shvat is all about. I heard a beautiful insight. I think this, anybody here a teacher? I'm a little bit of a teacher. Okay. Doesn't matter, if you're not a teacher, it's still relevant. I think it's such a brilliant insight. I heard this past Shabbos from the rabbi of my shul in Far Rockaway. He pointed out an incredible insight, I think. The Gemara tells a story of one of the great Tanoim, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. One of the greatest Tanoim ever to live. One of the greatest teachers, Jewish teachers ever to live. Found in various Mishnayos throughout almost many pages of the Talmud. You turn, you see Rabbi Elazar. That's Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. What happened? Well, the Gemara says in Shabbos, the Talmud teaches in Tractate Shabbos that what happened was there was a certain wine in a certain place called Diomsis. Pergaisa and Diomsis, two places. One had a very, very special wine, and the other had a very, very special springs. And the wine in the one place was so great, the Talmud teaches that it caused the 10 tribes, there were 12 tribes, and then unfortunately, 12 became 10 because 12 became 2 because 10 went astray. Why did 10 go astray? The Talmud says because they drank from these wines and they were so lured after the earthly pleasures of this world, and they bathed in these springs. That's what the Talmud says. Okay, so the Talmud says that Elazar ben Aruch went to this place. He went to drink from these wines, and he went to bathe in these springs. And it says in the Talmud that he lost everything. He forgot all of his Torah. He had learned everything. He was the final word on everything, and he lost it all. And he came back to the synagogue, back to where he used to live, and it was time to read from the Torah that week. And instead of reading the words from this past week's portion, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, which is the first mitzvah, the first obligation that the Jewish people is commanded collectively, he read, HaChiresh HaYalibam, deaf was their hearts. The rabbis couldn't believe it. How could it be? The great Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, he read the words wrong. He read HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem into HaChiresh HaYalibam. How could it be? All the rabbis prayed for him. They davened for him. He should remember his Torah, and he remembered it. That's the story. An unbelievably perplexing story. What is going on? The great Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who the Mishnah teaches, he was kimayana mezgaber. He was like a spring that never ended. He forgot all of his Torah. And why exactly was it this verse of Achodesh Zalachem? So listen to one of the great Hasidic rabbis, the Chidush Rebbe. Listen to the insight he gives into this. I almost fell off my seat this past Shabbos in Shul. He said like this. We know the rabbis teach us, HaChodesh Zalachem means, not only that this is the first commandment you have of sanctifying the new moon, but there's a deeper message, and that is what we spoke about before, renewal, rebirth. That inside every single Jew is HaChodesh, HaChidesh Zalachem. Every Jew has the ability to renew himself, to snap out of it, to overcome, to find a renewal in life. Says the Chiddush HaHerim as follows. If a person who has the ability to influence goes into a wrestling match, one thing is going to happen. Either he's going to win, or he's going to lose. There's no tie, there's no draw. Says the Chiddush HaHerim the following thing. He came into this town where they had all these springs and had all these wines. And he thought about them. He thought about them. HaChiresh HaYalibam. There's no hope for these people. I can't influence them. They're beyond hope. There's no renewal. HaChiresh HaYalibam. Their hearts are deaf. Even if I have a lot to impart to them, I can't do it. They got nothing. So you know what happened? He said, if a person describes and couches another person as impossible to grow, impossible to renew themselves, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's what's going to happen. If you say to a kid, you can't do it, if you think about someone, you can't snap out of it, guess what? They can't snap out of it. And therefore, the Torah, he came to read in Shul that Shabbos, HaChodesh Zalachem, to remind him, this is where you went wrong. You thought they couldn't snap out of it. You thought they couldn't find rebirth and renewal. No, but every single Jew, every single person in the world has the ability inside himself to renew himself and to find renewal. You can't think about anybody achirish elibam. If you want to be at all, you have a child, you have someone that you have the ability to influence. If you think about them, they're a lost cause, they're a hopeless cause. I can't do anything for them. That's what they're going to be. But if you realize, you know what, there's something I can do. With patience, with determination, there's something that can be done. And then there's hope. Then there's possibly hope. And that was the fault, so to speak, with which Rabbi Elazar had when he went to this town. My wife told me a story very recently. There's a group of people that learn one page of Talmud every day. It's called Daf Hayomi. They learn one page every day. Every 7.5 years, if you learn one page every day, they finish the entire cycle, and they have a big excitement at Madison Square Garden. I was at the last one seven years ago, almost 7.5 years ago. The next one's coming up beginning of March, another month and a half or so. Very amazing occasion. There was a great teacher that the Jews had called Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. He passed away around 15 years ago, a tremendous scholar. He got up, I guess it must have been two cycles ago, at the Siyum HaShas. He was 92 years old. And he said with passion and with fervor inside himself, my only hope is I'll be able to accomplish the next cycle and be there to celebrate in the next cycle. 92 years old. He'd been through the Talmud numerous times. So he wouldn't be there next. No, but a person lives life that there's what to live for. There's what to go on for. There's something to live for. There's excitement. Then already there's hope. A person says, I'm already done. I did my share. I put in what I was supposed to do, and now life is over. So then unfortunately that's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. I just want to close, wrap up with the following show and tell. There's a book that came out recently called Perek Shira by Art Scroll. Perek Shira is a very unique book. It's some dated all the way back to King David, some dated back to King Solomon. It basically is a description, beautiful pictures also, of all the praise that all different walks of life, the trees and the animals and the stars, all different parts of creation sing praise to Hashem. And exactly what they say. Again, I'm not sure, it's unclear who wrote it, but it's very special. So it's a beautiful book, nice pictures. If you want to take a look at it, I'll be happy to show it to you afterwards. But he brings over here a very, very nice lesson, I think, which hopefully will sum up everything we spoke about. This is a picture of a date. What does a date sing to God? How does a date praise God?
The right side.
Oh, sorry. This side. Okay. The right side, yeah. Sorry. There's a picture of a date. Which verse does the date sing, either physically or maybe not physically, it doesn't matter. So the verse brought is a verse from Proverbs, Mishlei. It says, Notzer te'ena yochal pirya. Which literally means the protector of a fig tree will eat its fruit. Why the protector of a fig tree? Why do you have to protect a fig tree? So the commentary explains over here, a fig tree must be guarded carefully and observed closely because its delicate fruits ripen over a long period of time and are vulnerable to infestation unless they are picked without delay. Attention is needed. Notzer te'ena yochal pirya. A person that guards a fig tree, that protects it, he's the one that will be able to eat the fruit of the fig tree. Specifically the fig, which takes a long time to ripen. So I think all the lessons that we spoke about, in terms of learning from a tree, I think the common thread they all have is, basically, what we put into it is what we're going to get out of it. Whether it's in the realm of spirituality, thinking about the fact that really our roots should be somewhat planted in Shamayim, in the sky, in the heavens, as opposed to in earthly matters. Or if we speak about the fact that our roots reflect, that the branches reflect our roots. Or the last point, the concept of renewal, all these points, of course, it all depends on how much help we get from on high. But in terms of what we do, so hopefully we'll be blessed with this blessing. Notzer te'ena, if we put it in ours, if we try as much as possible to have the renewal, if we try as much as possible to elevate that which is simply mundane. So then hopefully we'll be privileged to be yochal pirya. We'll be able to, so to speak, eat and merit, eat the fruits of our labor, and please God enjoy our coming Tu B'Shvat, and please God be able to live life in a more meaningful and enjoyable way. Okay, thank you for coming, for listening.
Okay. We have a sign-up sheet here. If anybody wants to sign their name, you can send out emails, more specific emails, next time we have anything. If anybody has any suggestions, please do email me at lectures@yw.edu.
Yeah, I think so. Is that possible? I agree with you.